Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing.
And Bubba Wallace.
You know what's the worst part of a race? A rain delay.
Sitting around, waiting for the track to dry, is dull.
But instead of waiting, we hang out with Chumba Casino.
Social casino slots, bingo, solitaire, plenty of fun to keep us entertained.
So why let a rain delay slow you down? Play now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
As a woman entrepreneur, you know that every connection counts, whether it's with your customers, your team, or your community. Spectrum Business is here to help you build those connections stronger and faster. Imagine running your business with fast, reliable, fiber-powered internet so you can stay connected to customers, employees, and vendors without having to worry. We know flexibility matters. That's why select Spectrum Business packages come with a 3-year price guarantee, so you can focus on running your business. Plus, enjoy savings on internet, phone, TV, and mobile services when you bundle, all with a 30-day money-back guarantee and no long-term contracts. With Spectrum Business, you get more than just internet. You get support with 100% U.S.-based customer service, real people who understand small business, ready 24/7 to help you stay up and running. Join millions of business owners like you across America who trust Spectrum Business for reliability, speed, and support. Visit spectrum.com/business today to get started. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
Parles-tu français?
Hablas español?
Parle italiano.
If you've used Babbel, you would. Babbel's conversation-based technique teaches you useful words and phrases to get you speaking quickly about the things you actually talk about in the real world. With lessons handcrafted by over 200 language experts and voiced by real native speakers, Babbel is like having a private tutor in your pocket. Start speaking with Babbel today. Get up to 55% off your Babbel subscription right now at babbel.com/listen. Spelled babbel.com/listen. Rules and restrictions may apply.
It's the Amazing Rico Bronya Podcast with your host, Evan Roberts.
Hola! Welcome in to a, I don't know if I should call this a happy edition of the Rico Bronya. I'll call this a, all right, it wasn't a complete disaster edition of the Rico. As the Mets salvaged the final game of a 3-game series against the Seattle Mariners, they stopped the Mariners' winning streak, which had reached 8. They snapped their own losing streak, which had reached 2, and they avoid an out-and-out disaster in a place that, over a very small sample size, had become a house of horrors, Seattle, Washington. The Mets win on Wednesday afternoon. That followed up really a dreadful loss on Tuesday. And overall, the Mets lose 2 out of 3 to the Seattle Mariners. They are now 8 games under .500. Right before I started the Rico, my oldest son, Jet, who was in the car for one of my drive-home Ricos, said, "Are we still a carcass on the side of the road?" I guess he remembers me saying that during the Subway Series edition of the Rico. And I said, all right, Jet, let me try to explain this. And I think most Met fans would agree. We're still on the side of the road. We are pretty much dead. But I guess there's that outside shot that a miracle drug will be created and will be brought back to life. That's how I guess I would describe the status of the 2026 season. Going into this road trip, they needed to avoid disaster. Like, sure, we could create a fictitious world in which they win 5 out of 6 games and everybody's happy and the team's making their move, but they need to survive. They're facing good teams. They were using two days in which they were using a starting pitcher coming out of the bullpen. They still have a lineup that doesn't feel like a capable major league lineup. And so you're just looking to survive. You know, the formula for this season is don't let go of the rope. Don't fall 20 games under .500. Maybe stay between 5 and 8 games under .500, get relatively healthy, and then hope for a miracle run. And if you're going to have that dream, you can't get swept by the Seattle Mariners. You wouldn't be able to go back to being 10 games under .500. So it was an important win on Wednesday afternoon. There was a lot of positives that you can take away from that game, from the performance of Freddy Peralta to the offensive performance of Bo Bichette. But I do want to start with the negative. Maybe we can cleanse ourselves. Game one of this series was talked about in episode 702. So if you want a recap of the crazy extra inning game, the difficult Monday night loss, I would say go back to episode 702. Obviously, we'll touch on the first game a little bit when we name the Rico I'm the Man Right Now star of the series and the net negative. But the story of game two is Mark Vientos. And it wasn't simply what he did on the field. It was what he said after the field or after the game was over. If you didn't hear these clips, whether you didn't watch the Met post-game show or hear Evan and Tiki today, I want to play them for you. and then we'll discuss the status of Mark Vientos. Mark had a bad defensive day. He not only committed a significant error at first base right after Marcus Semien had made an error, but a few innings later, there was another play that he should have made that he didn't. It was a bad hop, sure, but it's a play that a major league first baseman at least has a chance of making. Mark Vientos didn't. So he had in this game two bad defensive plays. He's had a handful of bad defensive plays throughout this season. So I want you to hear him being asked after the game about his defense and his reaction. Take a listen.
How do you evaluate how you've played defensively this season?
Pretty good. I feel like I've done a pretty good job over there. Been working. I feel like I've been doing pretty good.
When you say you're working, we respect that. I am not here to tell you Mark Vientos is not working hard. You cannot tell us that you're doing pretty well. You can't say you're doing a good job. And this follows a pattern now with Mark where he says things that are just odd. I mean, whether it's he has no regrets about running through a stop sign. Can't forget that one from, I think it was the day the last time the Knicks lost a playoff game. To this, how could you possibly think your defense is good? Like, I don't go home after every radio show and say I'm great. I go home and say, that sucked. I didn't do a good job. I would think most of us can self-evaluate. I don't know how Mark Vientos, especially knowing people are listening, Met fans are listening, can actually say into a microphone, I'm doing a pretty good job at first base. Now, there were ways to couch it, like, hey, I'm working really hard. Hey, it's still a position I'm not that comfortable with. Like, you could use excuses and couch it, and I think we would understand it. But you can't just say you're doing a good job. This other clip I want to play for you, and I'm going to give you the entire context, because I think if you cut it or clip it and just hear one part of it, it would drive you nuts. If you hear the whole part of it, there's more context to it. But along the lines of Mark Vientos' defense, Mark Vientos was asked about his offense this season.
I feel like this year is frustrating for what you've been able to do at the plate.
Yeah, I mean, I gotta give myself a little bit of props because last month, just a lot of bad luck. But, I mean, the inconsistency is not something that I want. I'm pushing for better results, working with the coaches, and trying my best to be the best version of myself right now. I mean, it's not happening, but I'm working for it for sure.
That last part, totally fine. He's working with the coaches. He's been inconsistent. There's a little bit of self-awareness. What you can't say is, I'd like to give myself props because, hey, I've hit the ball hard. I mean, it's just one of those things that you shouldn't say because you come across like you're tone deaf. Mark Vientos is hitting 220. He has 7 home runs. He has 26 RBIs. And he's been given a gift from the baseball gods to play every single day. While there have been some moments, and we have appreciated those moments, I think I have been fair with when he gets a big hit. I say, hey, that was a big hit by Mark Vientos. Or that was a nice home run by Mark Vientos. There have been some good moments. But to his point that he eventually made, he's been wildly inconsistent. And you're hitting 220. And your OPS is on the sixes. Like, you can't say you deserve props. And I'm sure it's a coincidence. I'm sure it was more the fact that George Kirby was on the mound and Jared Young has played so well. But a part of me wanted to think that the reason Carlos Mendoza didn't play him in the finale of this series was because of what he said on Tuesday night. I don't know if that's actually the case. Again, that's kind of my own fan fiction. Maybe your fan fiction as a Met fan. Because I know that if you invested time watching Tuesday night's game, and really any game this season, you come away hearing Mark Vientos' comments about how his defense is pretty good and he needs to give himself props. And you say to yourself, what is this guy talking about? What planet is he on? And when you go to Tuesday's game, following the brutal extra inning loss the day before, you can put Tuesday's loss on a lot of individuals. There are a lot of people that you can point towards and say, it's your fault. And it starts with Waskar Brazoban, right? And Waskar's tough to rip because he's had such a great year, but he gets through the first inning. He puts a guy on base in the second inning, And ahead of the count, 0-2, which we've seen so often, he throws a changeup right down the middle, and Patrick Wisdom parks one for a two-run home run. Some blame for Waskar Brazeman. Marcus Semien made an inexcusable defensive miscue. Blame for Marcus Semien. After a relatively good start to his performance, Jonah Tong ends up imploding and giving up a three-run homer to Johnny Pareda. Major blame to Jonah Tong. And you can look up and down this lineup that managed only three runs and five hits. Other than Carson Benj, every single person in the lineup deserves some kind of blame. But ultimately, Mark Vientos cost the Mets Tuesday on so many levels. I'll mention those other names like I did, but Mark was so bad on Tuesday night. And I say this as someone that has supported him to the level of, hey, guys, he still gives them the best chance. Hey, guys, he's got the power potential. Hey, guys, remember what he did in the postseason in 2024. I still have spent a lot of time here on the Rico defending why he should play, why he still gives them the best chance at success. Tuesday night was a moment, and maybe it's being in a bad mood. It's a West Coast game. I don't know. Or maybe it was so bad on Tuesday that I even walked away from it, and this is before he made any of those post-game comments, and said, I don't know if they could play him anymore. I think you're almost at that point now where Jared Young, credit to Jared Young, just should be run out there every day, maybe even against lefties. Maybe we even go that far. Because let me list the things that Mark Vientos did on Tuesday night if you didn't see it. So after Patrick Wisdom hits that two-run home run off Waskar Brazeman, Carson Benj hits a two-run home run, which was awesome. Got a big reaction from me sitting in my Barco lounger at about 11 o'clock at night. I was a little bit behind on the DVR, so give or take what time it actually happened. For me, it was about 11 o'clock. Two-run home run. You go down 2-0. You immediately respond. Very un-Met-like. But it's a new game. It's 2-2. And you go to that bottom of the third inning, and we have seen some bad innings this season, some really, really bad innings this season. What we saw in the third inning was an abomination. First, Randy Arozarena hits a line drive towards Marcus Semien. He leaps up. He knocks it down. He should make the catch, but fine. He knocks it down. And Marcus Semien, who's been in the league forever and is a Gold Glove caliber second baseman, rushes the throw and makes an atrocious throw, leading Arozarena to a two-base error. Cannot happen. And for all the Semien lovers that want to tell me about how clutch he is and how well he played in the series against Miami, look, both of those things are true. Like, he has been clutch this season. He had a big series against Miami. At the end of the day, he's a 220 hitter with six home runs and 23 RBIs. He better make every play defensively. And while I think he's been better than the defensive metrics, no doubt, there's a handful of plays that cannot happen going back to Washington. That's one of those plays that cannot happen. And it's followed up by Luke Raley hitting an easy line drive to first base. And I don't know what Mark Vientos is doing. I have no idea. What, he closes his glove too soon? Or as Daniel Murphy described, he thought it was going to be hit harder than it was and it softened up. I don't know. But again, it goes back to what I said about Marcus Semien's defense and miscue. Cannot happen. Cannot happen. This team is not good enough to make mistakes like that. Your offense just got off the mat against a tough customer in Logan Gilbert, immediately responded by scoring two runs, and you've got Marcus Semien and Mark Vientos not being able to catch a line drive sit right at them. Can't happen. And credit to Jonah Tong. This is why Jonah Tong's performance is odd to me. Like, the pitching line is terrible. 3 1/3 innings, five runs. Totally get it. His command was off again. And he got rewarded by sending down to the minor leagues, which we'll talk a little bit later on about in terms of the roster ideas and options that the Mets have for their rotation. But Jonah Tong, after getting the strike out of J.P. Crawford in the second, allows two balls that should have been outs to become base hits, extra base hits, and then proceeds to very calmly get the fourth and fifth out of the inning. So I was impressed by Jonah Tong. I have to admit, at least in that inning could have been an outright disaster. Instead, it was simply Seattle getting a run off the backs of the Met bad defense. He then puts himself into trouble in the fourth inning, puts the first two guys on base, and, you know, somewhat gets out of it. Gives up a sacrifice fly, so one of the runs scores, And then he gets Randy Arozarena to line out. He's not the sharpest, but he's avoiding the implosion. And then, unfortunately, the fifth inning was just where it came undone. Gets the first out, gives up an infield hit. That was the play that Vientos should have made. Gives up a base hit to Canzone. Gets a huge out of Patrick Wisdom. And then he's in a battle with Johnny Pareda, who is the backup catcher. And unfortunately, on the ninth pitch of the at-bat, he makes the huge mistake that turns into a three-run home run, which defines his game and turns it into a 3 1/3 innings, five-run performance. But I thought that Jonah Tong had shown a little bit of fight in this performance. I wasn't 1,000% ready to send him down after this performance. And I think the main reason he was sent down wasn't necessarily that the performance was that bad. I think it was more just about the roster right now and the off days and the way the Mets could kind of fill that rotation spot and give him more opportunities in AAA before he gets another chance. But he was not helped out by his defense. He was not helped out by the back-to-back errors in the third, and he certainly wasn't helped out by the Mark Vientos miscue with one out, nobody on in the fifth inning. And unfortunately, when you have an offense like this, you go from being down 2-0, you tie the game at 2, you go down 3-2 because of the error, you go down 4-2, and that three-run home run just completely broke the game open. And you knew it. And I'm sure there's a lot of people, if you're consuming the Rico Bronya, whether live on YouTube or downloaded wherever you download your podcast, that was the moment you shut the game off. Bottom of the fifth inning, a 4-2 game becomes 7-2. With this limp offense, you're out. And I don't blame you. But here's what's crazy. What's so crazy about Tuesday, why it really pissed me off, and it goes back to Mark Vientos. They're down by a score now of 7-2. It feels over, right? Five-run game, sixth inning, it's late at night. Carson Bench hits his second home run of the game, 7-3. Oh, okay. All right. You know, you're a couple of base hits away from at least making this thing interesting. With one out of nobody on, Juan Soto singles, and Jared Young has a really good at-bat in which he draws a walk. And so here comes Mark Vientos against the reliever Eduardo Bizzardo with two on and one out. It's a 7-3 game in the sixth inning. This game is no longer over. The dead body or the dead carcass on the side of the road is showing life. And really, those analogies don't work because as much as they're dead, they're done, and while I believe it and you believe it, we still watch and hope as if there's going to be a resurrection. So maybe the analogy isn't dead. Maybe the analogy is wounded severely, or maybe I should just think of a more PC analogy, whatever you want to come up with. I'll take your options at thericob@gmail.com. But when Mark Vientos comes up on Tuesday night, game two of this series, in a 7-3 game with two on and one out, you are a base hit away from making it a game. From forcing Dan Wilson and the Mariners to use their bullpen, from making them sweat. From who knows, the Mets finally having the kind of win that you really pull out of nowhere. And you have to have those if you're going to have a good year. I know they had it against the Yankees, so I don't want to dismiss that great comeback. But there's going to have to be a few games in which everyone thinks the game is over and you come back and win. And if Mark Vientos comes through with anything but a 5-4-3 double play on the first pitch, you never know what Tuesday turns into. And instead, he swung at the first pitch and bounced into a 5-4-3 double play. So when I and others rip Mark Vientos as the poster boy of Game 2's loss, it's not just the defense, it's that at-bat. And at that point, now you can really shut the TV off because any chance of coming back went away. They did get the leadoff man on in the seventh inning, and then Marcus Semien promptly grounded into a double play. But that was it. That was their chance. That was their moment. So I can change our format a little bit. You know, I can, instead of waiting until later, maybe we just get it out of the way now and say Mark Vientos is the net negative of this series. In game one of this series, off of the bench, he came up in the 10th inning with a runner on second and one out to try to bail out Juan Soto, and he struck out.
Ready to level up? Chumba Casino is your playbook to fun. It's free to play with no purchase necessary. Enjoy hundreds of online social games like blackjack, slots, and solitaire anytime, anywhere with fresh releases every week. Whether you're at home or on the go, let Chumba Casino bring the excitement to you. Plus, get free daily login bonuses and a free welcome bonus. Join now for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Play Chumba Casino today. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. TNCs apply.
When the stakes rise and the lights get bright, that's when you find out who can really swim. Deep Waters is a new UFC podcast from CBS Sports. Every Monday, myself, Dean Thomas, alongside with legends of the sport, Chris Weidman, Jorge Masvidal, and Dustin Poirier, bring you inside the octagon like no one else can. Deep Waters, new episodes every Monday. Watch on YouTube or listen on Apple, Spotify, and everywhere else you get podcasts.
As a woman entrepreneur, you know that every connection counts, whether it's with your customers, your team, or your community. Spectrum Business is here to help you build those connections stronger and faster. Imagine running your business with fast, reliable, fiber-powered internet so you can stay connected to customers, employees, and vendors without having to worry. We know flexibility matters. That's why select Spectrum Business packages come with a 3-year price guarantee, so you can focus on running your business. Plus, enjoy savings on internet, phone, TV, and mobile services when you bundle, all with a 30-day money-back guarantee and no long-term contracts. With Spectrum Business, you get more than just internet. You get support with 100% U.S.-based customer service, real people who understand small business, ready 24/7 to help you stay up and running. Join millions of business owners like you across America who trust Spectrum Business for reliability, speed, and support. Visit spectrum.com/business today to get started. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
And then Mark Vientos takes an 0-for-4 in game two, including the double play we mentioned, commits an error, makes a defensive miscue, and was not involved in any way in the one game they won. So there are other candidates that you can nominate. You can nominate Brooks Raley for what happened in the opener of this series when he came in with a lead and gave up the lead. He's a candidate for the net negative. Jonah Tong giving up the 5 runs. Waskar Brazoban having a failed opening performance. Statistically, Brett Beatty, which I know people have been really hoping he could get a net negative, was 1-for-12 in this series. You can rip him. Marcus Simeon went 1-for-11, including the error right before Mark Vientos' error. So I know there's a lot of candidates, but I'm going to get it out of the way because I don't want to spend that much more time talking about him, and there are positives to get to. So we'll make it official early on here in the Rico. Mark Vientos, you are the net negative. And based on this year's net negatives, believe it or not, for the year he's had, it is only the second time Mark Vientos is winning a net negative. I am stunned by that. I'm looking up and down. Freddy Peralta won it last week. Nolan McLean has won it twice. Marcus Simeon has won it 3 times. Bo Bichette has won it 5 times. Soto, Tobias Myers, Luke Weaver once, Devin Williams once, Lindor twice. Yeah, Mark Vientos hasn't won a net negative since the Arizona series, in which he went 0-for-10 and 0-for-5 with runners in scoring position. So, congratulations. We got that out of the way. Mark Vientos, you are the net negative. Because say what you want about all those other guys, at least they contributed to the good. Couple of other quick thoughts from game two. Benj's game was really encouraging. The 11-pitch at-bat to start the game against Logan Gilbert, even if it didn't lead anywhere. Really good at-bat. He hits the 2 home runs. The 2-run shot that tied the game in the 3rd. The home run in the 6th. That made it a 4-run game. Carson Benj continues to be impressive. Mendy's decision-making. Keeping Waskar Brazoban in as long as he did. I think what you saw in game two is an argument against the opener. On why the opener doesn't work sometimes. And I think sometimes it does. You know, I've mentioned that with David Peterson. I thought it makes sense the way you kind of steal matchups. But here's the problem you run into. So Waskar Brazoban has a shaky first inning. He puts a guy on base with a walk, the leadoff batter. He gets through it, gets helped out by some pretty good defense, but whatever, gets through the first inning. He gives up a 1-out single, and here comes Patrick Wisdom. Brazoban has now thrown nearly 30 pitches, 25 pitches, wherever he's at this point. You kind of want to take him out. But then the guy you're going to, if you're going to your bulk starter, is Jonah Tong, who ideally you don't want to go to with guys on base. And so now you're hesitating to go to your bulk pitcher because you're so afraid of using him in a role that he may not be that familiar with. So do you go to another reliever? Do you put Tong in a spot that he's not that comfortable with? Eventually, Tong did come in with a runner on 2nd and 2 out. Or do you just stick with Brazoban? And he stuck with Brazoban, and look, he screwed up. He threw an 0-2 changeup. I think it was supposed to go down. It did not. It hung right there. Wisdom gives up the home run. And it sucks to go to your bulk pitcher, your starting pitcher, essentially, and he's already losing. Now, that excuse goes away because the Met offense did respond and immediately tie the game. So when Jonah Tong was towing the rubber in the third inning, he was doing it in a tie game. But yeah, I would have pulled Brazoban a little bit earlier. I also don't know if in the case of Tong, why not just start him? You know, you look at the Mariner batting order, and you've got J.P. Crawford, the lefty. You got J-Rod, the righty. You got Randy Arozarena. In this case, they had Luke Riley hitting cleanup. I don't know. I don't know if the matchups jump out at me as much as it does sometimes with David Peterson. Like, just start the kid. And if he only goes three or four innings, what's the difference? You still need to get the same amount of outs. You're just divvying it up in a different way. And if you take him out mid-inning, you're going to a reliever that is more comfortable than not, if you will. So that would be the one thing I disagree with in terms of Mendy. I'm thinking about anything else that like really pissed me off. You know, used MJ Melendez as a pinch hitter, no issue there. I mean, the lineup, yeah. The lineup is so tough to complain about. The only issue I had with the lineup, and I raised my hand, I will tell you that it obviously turned out to work, was not dropping Bo Bichette in the lineup. And Daniel Murphy, who I thought had a great series, Daniel Murphy said, as much as we hate it, he's Bo Bichette. He's got a great resume. You're not going to drop him in the order, which I disagree with, but I think that's what the reason they didn't. And well, what's funny is Bo Bichette had the best game of his Met career in game three. So dropping him in the lineup, I guess, wasn't necessary for now. Let me read a couple of your emails about game two, and then we'll get to game three. We'll still pick our star of the series and the roster decisions that they're being made right now. Hugh, an 11-year-old fan, right? Say, Evan, we are at game two in Seattle, and Mark Vientos needs to go. There you go, Hugh. This guy gets into a double play every at-bat that matters. He can't field. We watched him make three errors in the field. The team is done. Jonah Tong was left in way longer than needed. Our only hope is Carson Benge. The rest sucks. Did they leave Tong in too much? I didn't really feel that way. Like when he was facing Pareda with guys on base in the fifth inning, I was okay with Tong remaining in. He gives up the home run. He gives up a bunt hit, gets the last out, and then he was taken out. So I will disagree with that too. I think it was Brazoban that stayed in a little bit too long. Tommy writes, how much more can we handle with Mark Vientos? He's in over his skis. All the shoddy defense in the world and an instant rally killer in the sixth inning. How much longer are we going to have to suffer through this? I hate to dump on a guy, but we can't keep worrying about the next Justin Turner. They have to be better at evaluating talent and realizing when something simply isn't working anymore. And there is the Julio Rodriguez home run, fully erasing Carson Benge's efforts. Good night. Craig writes, Evan, I need you to read this to the world. Mark Vientos is the worst baseball player I have ever seen in my 35 years on the planet. He does nothing well, and I truly believe that any player in the Mets system can do what he does if given unlimited opportunities. You want another Vientos rip job before we move on? Matthew in San Antonio. Uh-oh. Someone from San Antonio writes, hey, Evan, love the show. Fairly new to baseball, so I'm enjoying watching and listening despite how awful the Mets have been. I'm writing this after Mark Vientos' double play. Mark Vientos has to be DFA'd or at least benched. Him hitting into a double play was the most predictable of outcomes. Combined with his horrible error early in the game, Vientos is the epitome of this loser Mets culture. Whether it's his hissy fits, his double plays, his bad swings, or his bad defense, his presence on the Mets is just a rotten apple on an even more rotten team. I think we've heard enough about this. I will offer this view on Vientos moving forward because I think we've covered how bad he was in game two. He's already won the net negative, all of that. I think what the Mets may need to do is what they tried to do last year and the year before that at times, which is he's the DH. Jared Young, I've been critical of Jared Young, but here we are, right? Jared Young should play first base. Jared Young should even get at-bats against lefties at first base. Jared Young should play there, hopefully grow as a first baseman. No one's confusing him with Rico Bronya, but he needs the experience. And I think Mark Vientos should mostly be the DH for this team. And I think that's where his role is. I'm not DFAing him. It's not because I'm afraid he's the next Justin Turner. I still think there can be a value for him. His inconsistency is a huge issue, but maybe taking the glove away will help. And if Lindor is close, and that is certainly the hope, I think that of all the injuries that one can bring up, whether it's the return of Francisco Alvarez, who's on rehab, or Kodai Senga, who may rejoin the rotation, Lindor is the game changer. Because Lindor coming back could now allow Brett Beatty to be a part of the mix in terms of first base. And Ryan Clifford is another guy we have to keep an eye on in AAA as a possible option. So in closure for now on Vientos, I don't want to DFA him. Am I open to trading him? Of course. This is all about what you get back and value and whatnot. But I still think there are going to be moments where they need him, as depressing as that is. Let's get to game three of this series on Wednesday afternoon, if you were able to consume any of it. This was a really important game. Getting swept and dropping to 10 games under 500, it continues to make the hole very difficult to get out of. And what you don't want or didn't want and still could have happened is to allow this West Coast trip to be the proper burial. This is a tougher schedule the Mets are dealing with. I don't think anyone was delusional enough to think that this was going to be a 5-1 trip or they're going to continue to really gain on the sub 500 record that they have. It's more, can they maintain? Can they avoid a burial? Get a little healthier? And who knows, maybe they go on their run at a later date. Basically, you're extending your death warrant. That's how I would look at this. And getting swept is just, it's tough to overcome. And you've got Freddy Peralta on the mound, who is, in theory, supposed to be your ace. Now, the first three innings of this game was absolutely infuriating. Because in the first inning, Bo Bichette gets a hit, which was great to see. Juan Soto dumps a single. Nice. Jared Young beats out a potential double play ball, but that double play ball doesn't beat it out. He hits a potential double play ball, and then the throw by Josh Naylor goes into left field. And so the Mariners pull a Mets. Naylor pulls a Vientos. And the Mets, by the grace of God, they're given a run. It's just handed to them. Like, here's a run. So the infuriating part is they hand you a run and Brett Beatty and Marcus Semien can't take advantage of it. So instead of turning the Mariners' bad defense into three runs, into some kind of crooked number, the Mets settle for the one run the Mariners handed them. If that's not bad enough, I am so glad that I have learned to get off Twitter during Met games, or we're not doing live Ricos in the middle of games. Because I was using every curse word in the book to describe Freddy Peralta when he gave up the leadoff home run to J.P. Crawford. And I'll reenact a little bit because I always want to be fair with what I think and what I said in the moment. Whether I'm right or wrong, it doesn't matter. Freddy, you are supposed to be the ace of the team. The Mets gave you a run by accident. Can you spend more than 30 seconds on the mound before you give the lead back? He gives up the home run to J.P. Crawford. And I think I speak for anybody that was investing time at 4 o'clock in the afternoon watching this game. I thought they were done. I thought Freddie's going to implode. This is going to be a disaster. The Met offense won't figure out George Kirby, the Rye kid. And they're going to be swept. And we're going to be doing a sweeped in Seattle edition of the Rico Bronya. Freddy Peralta, and this is where I will give him the proper love, was not great, but he battled. He gives up the home run to Crawford, gets through the first inning, gets through a two-out single in the second inning. The big one was the third inning. Gives up the leadoff double to J.P. Crawford, walks Julio on 4 pitches, and then very calmly gets Josh Naylor to fly out and Randy Arozarena to bounce into a double play. That is yeoman's work from Freddy Peralta. And then the baseball gods. The baseball gods mostly hate us. They mostly laugh at us. They mostly say LOL Mets. And sometimes the baseball gods are cruel. But in the fourth inning, with 2 on and 1 out and a 3-2 count on Johnny Pareda, who had a base hit earlier in the game, and remember, hit the 3-run home run a day earlier off of Jonah Tong, got called for something that, as Gary Cohen said, none of us have ever seen. They called Pareda for the Chris Webber. They said Pareda tried to call a timeout when he did not have a timeout And instead of just ignoring him and saying, you don't have a timeout, I never heard you, they called a violation on him on a 3-2 pitch. Holy crap. That is as lucky as you can get. And I'll take it. And Freddie, to his credit, followed it up by striking out Colt Emerson. So he backed up the lock by getting a real strikeout after the Fugazi strikeout. And Freddie did that right after the Mets actually gave him a lead. He gave them three shutdown innings in a row after he gave up the leadoff home run and the Mets gave him the lead. And so ultimately, six innings, one run, 101 pitches, fine. Totally fine. Not going to nitpick it, not going to say he needs to go deeper into the game because he was hittable. He put guys on base. He was able to get through it. And you know what makes the six innings acceptable? And this has nothing to do with him, but it's the situation, and the situation sometimes matters. Number one, the Mets gave him six runs. So when he leaves the game after six innings, he's not leaving in a 1-1 game. He's leaving with a 6-1 lead. And also, because the Mets have an off day on Thursday and an off day on Monday, you can use your bullpen more liberally. It's the days where it can really impact you, like last weekend, where Freddie struggling the way he did damaged the roster the whole weekend, essentially cost Tobias Myers a major league job for 2 weeks. So some of it is not him. Some of it is the circumstances. But six innings, one run is a fine effort. Really good job by Peralta after a terrible start. And good job by the Met offense, especially the $42 million man himself. Because Bo Bichette was the leading candidate at 0-7 in the first two games. And in the midst of an 0-13, he was the leader in the clubhouse to racking up another net negative. He was the guy. And not only does he deliver the base hit in the first inning, which led to the unearned run, an 0-2 base hit in the third inning, but the big one was the two-run single in the fourth inning. And it was big because MJ Melendez made a minor mistake that felt like it could be critical. In the fourth inning of this game, tied at one, you get the one-out walk by MJ Melendez. Great. Good job by MJ. The Mets play hit and run, which is fantastic. Give me hit and run. Give me things like that. Give me aggressiveness when your offense averages less than four runs a game. You got to give me that. And so they play hit and run, and Torrens perfectly places it into right field for a base hit. And Melendez slides in a second, thinking it's a stolen base attempt. Thinking, I guess that shows you it wasn't hit and run, right? That it was just MJ running on the pitch because he's diving in a second. He's not even looking at where the ball went. And that slide into second costs him from going to third. And so instead of first and third, one out, it's first and second, nobody out. And what does Carson Benj do right after that? He bloops a base hit in the left field and the run doesn't score. And so instead of the Mets taking a 2-1 lead, it's bases loaded, one out, and it is set up. It is set up for Bo Bichette, despite getting two hits in his first two at-bats, to grounding into a back-breaking double play. And now we're thinking about the Melendez slide as if he goes first to third, he scores on the base hit, the Mets have the lead. And baseball's a game of inches. And I know Bo's hitting some bad luck. He hits one right up the middle. Luckily, there's no defender there. It's not a double play. It's a two-run single. Really important at-bat for Bo Bichette. Jared Young delivered the baseball god laughing RBI double. Hoff has done a great job today. Whenever we do these afternoon Ricos right after an afternoon game, I give him so much credit because he's producing the Carton Show and doing everything that involves that. And then he's also setting up the Rico Brugna. And so he has us on the air working and ready to go. I think he's driving right now, so he's not capable of doing this. But at a later date, maybe later in the episode or maybe on the next Rico, I got to play some of my favorite Daniel Murphy moments. Because on the Jared Young RBI double, it was the ball that hit the first base bag. Daniel Murphy would have made Susan Waldman blush with the reaction as the analyst. Sometimes Susan will go, that's great. Daniel Murphy whiffed out a major bark after Jared Young's ground ball hit the first base bag and then went into right field. And I gave
grounded down to first. Fair ball off the bag. And the Mets get a break. In the score comes Soto.
A pincushion double for Jared Young, and it's 5-1 New York.
Hear that? Hear that? Oh! Are you capable of playing that one more time, Hoff, so people can be ready for it? Get ready.
Grounded down to first. A fair ball off the bag, and the Mets get a break.
That was my favorite Daniel Murphy call. There's some other things he did during this series. He's not perfect, but I love him. That's my kind of description of Daniel Murphy as a broadcaster. There's some things he needs to improve on. I was surprised he had no idea that you play a team once a year and the schedule machinations. But okay, you know, that's fine. I was a little surprised he didn't know that Nick Spurs was in San Antonio for game one. But I think Murph is very good and very entertaining. And with work, he's going to be one of the best. Simple as that. Like, there are certain guys you hear and you're like, I don't know. And then there are other guys, not perfect, but he's on his way to being a stud if he wants to. So I know that Murphy sometimes listens to the Rico. Let me tell you, bro, if you keep it up, you'll be awesome. Because I think you already are. Very funny, down to earth. I'm already over the Gary Cohen stuff. Like, fine, you guys are friends now. Great job by Murph. But that double by Jared Young was lucky. And that's okay. Just like the violation strikeout to Pareto was lucky. And again, that's okay. This team needs that.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing.
And Bubba Wallace.
You know what's the worst part of a race? A rain delay.
Sitting around waiting for the track to dry is dull.
But instead of waiting, we hang out with Chumba Casino.
Social casino slots, bingo, solitaire, plenty of fun to keep us entertained.
So why let a rain delay slow you down? Play now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
As a woman entrepreneur, you know that every connection counts, whether it's with your customers, your team, or your community. Spectrum Business is here to help you build those connections stronger and faster. Imagine running your business with fast, reliable, fiber-powered internet so you can stay connected to customers, employees, and vendors without having to worry. We know flexibility matters. That's why select Spectrum Business packages come with a 3-year price guarantee, so you can focus on running your business. Plus, enjoy savings on internet, phone, TV, and mobile services when you bundle, all with a 30-day money-back guarantee and no long-term contracts. With Spectrum Business, you get more than just internet. You get support with 100% U.S.-based customer service, real people who understand small business, ready 24/7 to help you stay up and running. Join millions of business owners like you across America who trust Spectrum Business for reliability, speed, and support. Visit spectrum.com/business today to get started. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
Baseball is back, and BetMGM, official partner of Major League Baseball, is bringing the heat all season long. Step up to the plate all season with Swing for the Fences, the free-to-play game where every swing could score you rewards. We're talking parlay boost tokens, odds boost tokens, same-game parlay boost, and even bonus spins all season long. And the action doesn't stop there. Get more out of every at-bat with MLB same-game parlay boost. Stack your picks and boost your potential payout. Plus, lock in bigger value with MLB odds boost tokens and MLB parlay boost tokens all season long. More boosts, more swings, more chances to win. Download the BetMGM app and step up to the plate today. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. 21 plus and present in Ohio. Existing customer offer. Subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards payback and unrestricted withdrawable funds. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. In partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
So it was good to see the offense. I mean, the Mets went out and put up 7 runs and didn't hit a home run. They relied on clutch hitting. They relied on some lucky hitting. I thought the 8th inning run was also kind of underratedly cool, the 8th run of the game. Yeah, they actually scored 8. How many runs did they score? 4, 5, 6, 7. I guess it was 7. 7-1 was the final score. Yes, 7. The 7th run, Torrens doubles. Benj advances him on a ground out. And then Bo Bichette hits a sacrifice fly. I like that one too. I'm always a big fan of that. Like, if they're going to give you a run because you have the leadoff man on at second base, when you have the leadoff man on at second base, that guy should score almost every time. So Wednesday's game was really good. It was one of those games where, yeah, they had some luck. Yeah, there was some moments of botherment, if you will, but it was a nice, comfortable victory. They haven't had a lot of those. They've put a few of those up recently, Saturday and Sunday against Miami, this game against Seattle. And it was an important win that keeps the holding of the rope alive. They are back now to 8 games under .500. They face a Padre team that's had their issues. And I'm not thinking they're going to sweep them or anything like that, but this is the series you want to win. You win this series, you take 2 out of 3, and you go home with a 3-3 road trip. That's exactly what kind of I was gunning for going into this trip. So 8 games under .500 is nothing to celebrate, but that was a good victory. But you know what you can celebrate? You could celebrate your highlights with Mio Sparkling Sake, a true crowd pleaser. Light, bubbly, and easy to enjoy, whether you're at Citi Field or your favorite spot. As for Mio Sparkling Sake by name, a new tradition, served chilled, imported from Japan, the official sake of Rico Bronya. Enjoy responsibly. Let's get to some of your emails. We'll pick a Rico on the man right now, star of the series. Our buddy Howard, who I love Howard. Howard writes in now with his opinions, very strong opinions, on the Rico, I'm the man right now, star of the series, and the net negative. And he even gave me a table of stats, which I got to tell you, even though I wrote it down myself, I appreciate that. That could save me time. He says, my votes are for Carson Benj as the Rico, I'm the man right now, and Mark Vientos for the net negative. He then supplies all the stats. His reason for Benj: I vote for Benj given how he positively impacted 2 games, 2 home runs in 1 game and a steal of home. Won it for me. Strong honorable mention, Freddy Peralta, as he did go 6 innings, parade time. I did not like the deep counts and the walks, and A.J. Ewing played some really good defense in Game 1. Another honorable mention is Luke Weaver, 2 outings, more than 2 innings, 13 straight scoreless outings. Sean Manaea for 5 strong innings in Game 1. You correctly pointed out how Mendy blew Game 1 by taking him out, then was not totally truthful about why. Yeah, I broke that one down. If you want to go to episode 702, where we examined Manaea being pulled, what Mendy said the reasons were, and then we broke down if those reasons were true, like velocity and pitch counts. So this is one where I'd say definitely check out episode 702 and search for when we go into detail about Manaea, because we did go into very big details about that. And finally, the other honorable mention is Bo Bichette. He was awful in Game 1 and Game 2, but 4 hits in Game 3 plus a sacrifice fly. Mark Vientos is clearly the net negative. Not only was he 0 for 5 and a ground ball into double play, his 2 defensive miscues, only 1 error, helped cost us the game. He gets special accommodations for his tone-deaf comments after Game 1. Yeah, dude, we can look at the honorable mentions. I've already said it's Vientos. No, it's done. But he also mentioned Jonah Tong, Brett Beatty, Juan Soto, who definitely hurt us in Game 1 in the 10th inning. Overall, 2 for 13 in this series. A very quiet week for Juan Soto. Look at the team stats. They are the microcosm of the season. 1-2 record, 11 runs scored, 3.7 runs per game. Team averages of .204, on base of .234, OPS .593. Run prevention again, yes, Hoff, with 11 runs allowed in 3 games. So there's your breakdown by Howard. Very well done. I don't know if I want to read an email that says defending David Stearns. I don't think I'm ready for that. And that doesn't mean I don't agree. It's just like I don't want to hear about David Stearns. Like, we actually didn't even mention his press conference a few days ago because I listened to it and I didn't even want to waste time on the Rico. And that's saying something, because we do episodes for like a fart. You know, Carlos Mendoza cuts gas and we're doing a Rico. So it says something if I'm like, I don't want to waste time on what David Stearns said, but it was just, it was meaningless. It was meaningless words. Luis writes, the net negative is Juan Soto. 2 for 13, left a free runner on second in Game 1. Juan Soto's got to be better. I mean, you're right. You're right. Arye wants to talk about SNY. I'll read that email and then we'll pick our Rico on the man right now. Arye writes, maybe we're at the point where all we have left is the quality of the broadcast, but I feel like this year it's really gone down. Gary, Keith, and Ron are always great, as is Daniel Murphy. Elwin filling in, not looking forward to Gelb's play-by-play this weekend. Oh, Steve Gelb's doing play-by-play this weekend? I must have missed that. But the quality of the visual is really lacking this year. From not showing side-angle replays of half swings to missing ABS challenges, the strike 3 on ABS to Torrens in the 5th, yep, they missed that, to random swinging cameras, the loss of the director, for legitimate reasons, has really hurt the broadcast. Thank you for your time. Yes, I agree. And I know there's a lot of things that, bad things that went into that director losing his job, so it's not about arguing about that. It's just the product's not as good this year. You're absolutely right. And one last email. I want to read this because it's a good question. Ryan writes, when Jorge Polanco comes back, what are the chances they DFA Mark Vientos? I know it will probably be MJ Melendez, but they have to be done with the Vientos experiment. The guy just flat out sucks. So my view on the Polanco return is to get rid of Adal Bruján because he barely plays. And his role is the backup shortstop. The backup shortstop on a very temporary basis could be any one of Brett Beatty or Marcus Semien or Jorge Polanco, as ideal as that isn't. Remember, if Bichette got hurt and you needed a real shortstop, you're making a roster move the next day. So I don't think you need a backup shortstop. We've seen the Mets do that before. So my answer to your question isn't Melendez or Vientos. It's Vidal Bruján. The I'm the Man right now star of the series is very tricky because I think Freddy Peralta deserves a lot of credit despite the words I used to describe him when he gave up the home run to J.P. Crawford. He is the ace of this team, and he went out and threw six innings and allowed one run. And while he wasn't great, my stat that matters is innings pitched and runs allowed. Everything else is, it doesn't matter. Everything else, and I feel this way when talking about a Cy Young winner, everything else is like eye candy, or it's stats that'll help you predict the future, or stats that tell you the guy was lucky. I don't care. In a given start, give up the fewest runs, period. Throw the most innings and give up the fewest runs. Everything else, not that relevant. Six innings is good. Parade worthy for Freddie. That is a reference to the Howie Rose clip we played a while back where Howie said Freddie acts as if going six innings is worthy of a parade. So that's where that came from. But he does go six innings and he only allows one run. Credit to him. Sean Manaea, I thought, is a nice honorable mention for the way he threw the baseball in game one of this series. Now, offensively, Jared Young hits a home run in game one that ties the game up in the fifth inning, has a quiet day in game two, and then provides two base hits, including the big RBI double, even though it was lucky, that really broke open the game in the fourth inning. So I think Jared Young is a worthy candidate. Bo Bichette confuses me because Bo Bichette was literally the favorite to be the net negative before he delivered the monster game three of this series. The argument for Bo is that he got the biggest hit of the game, which he did, the two-run single in the fourth. He drove in three runs, 4-for-4 with a sac fly, and it is the only game the Mets won. So he impacted the game that they won the most. But I kind of agree with Howard. Howard mentioned Carson Bench. And Carson Bench had an odd series in that he was 0-for-4 in game one, right? He didn't do anything offensively. In fact, in game one, nobody did anything offensively outside of the Jared Young home run and the Marcus Semien home run. But he played really good defense. In the seventh inning, right after Seattle tied the game, Randy Arozarena hit a ball to deep right field, and Carson Bench made a really nifty running catch. A.J. Ewing also made two really good plays in this game. But you saw some good defense from Carson Bench in game one. In game two, he not only gives you the 11-pitch at-bat, which I know didn't lead to anything, but who knows? Maybe that draws up the pitch count a little bit of Logan Gilbert, tires him out a little bit, who knows? But he hits two home runs. The only reason the Mets had a chance in this game down 2-0 was Bench hit a two-run homer to tie it, and he had a home run in the sixth inning that made it 7-3. And even in the eighth inning, when he came up with one out of nobody on and the team down by five runs, he drew a walk. So he did everything he could, at least to try to will their offense back into the game in game two. And then you go to the finale of this series. He has the long at-bat in the first inning, even though he strikes out. He gets the base hit in the middle of that rally in the fourth inning and also successfully reads that Paredes throwing down on the Soto stolen base attempt and steals home. So statistically for Bench, it's three hits in 12 at-bats. It's the two home runs. It's the steal of home. It's the good defense. But I kind of agree with Howard that Bench had some kind of positive impact on all three games. And I can't say that about Bo Bichette. And I'm not trying to be negative towards Bo Bichette at all. Like, I don't have an issue wanting to be nice and say, just give him the Rico, I'm the man right now. But I kind of agree with Howard's point. Pitching wise, Luke Weaver pitched well twice, absolutely. But I think when he came into game three, the game was pretty much already decided. So I think you got a lot of choices. AJ Ewing is an interesting candidate. He had three hits in the finale of this series, including a stolen base. I think his defense was outstanding. Like, Benj's defense was really good. I think Ewing's defense was up a level. So I kind of come down to Bo Bichette, Freddy Peralta, and Carson Bench. Those are the three guys that I kind of wrestle with. Hoff, are you able to talk on your drive home to kind of break this mental tie we're dealing with? I don't want you to drive into any kind of trouble. So if you can't, that's okay. I'll decide on my own. Oh, you know what I'll do? I'll go into the comments section of our YouTube chat. That's how I'll really do it. Newsflash, this team still sucks. Traffic. What?
I'm sitting in traffic.
Oh, all right. Go ahead.
I'm good to respond.
Go ahead, because most people just want to say that the Nets suck, the Mets suck, and that was it.
I'm going to give it to Carson Bench. I think
you're going to go with Carson Bench?
Yeah. Screw Bichette.
Okay, I'm with you. Oh, I like reading the comments. Pete Hoffman, one of the hardest working people at WFAN. The Mets are so bad that their fans treat one out of three like series wins. LMAOOO. First of all, no one's acting as if the Mets won the World Series or won this series. I mean, I think most of this Rico's actually been negative, if we're being honest. It's mostly been bashing Mark Vientos. But what they did is they sell. It could have been worse. That's what this was. It was a series that could have been worse than it actually was. But anyhow, Hoff says Carson Bench, so we'll make it official. And this is going to be unbelievable when I tell you this. Carson Bench, by winning the Rico I'm the Man Right Now star of the series, is the first Met to be a three-time winner in 2026. He was tied with Nolan McLean, Juan Soto, and believe it or not, Mark Vientos as the only other two-time winners. And Bo Bichette was a two-time winner as well. And now we've got a three-timer for Carson Bench. So congratulations to you, Carson. You're now a three-time I'm the Man Right Now. All right, let me get to some of these roster moves. So if you're not aware, Jonah Tong was sent down and Joey Gerber was called up to give them an extra arm. The Mets are right now embarking on a weird part of their schedule where they're actually getting off days. They have an off day on Thursday and they have an off day on Monday before they then play 10 consecutive games. So they have a chance, if they want, to play around with this rotation and not need a fifth starter until the weekend against Atlanta. So Jonah Tong goes down. They've got 2 weeks down in the minor league. So he wouldn't make the next start just timing-wise. It wouldn't work out for him. But they've got a chance after San Diego, where they're planning on starting Christian Scott, Nolan McLean, and then Sean Manaea in some role, to go Freddy Peralta on Tuesday and then come back around Wednesday and Thursday with Christian Scott, Nolan McLean, and then Sean Manaea. So Saturday against Atlanta would be when the Mets need to add a starting pitcher. So what they're able to do now is give themselves an extra bullpen arm. For now, it's Joey Gerber. That can obviously change. And then the weekend of their homestand against Atlanta, like I said, they would have to add somebody to the rotation. Kodai Senga is pitching in the minor leagues. He is not pitching well. And what I thought was beneficial to the Senga injury, quote unquote, the back issue, is that it allowed them to sneak him to the minor leagues. Like, he's hurt. Okay. He recovers. And now the rehab assignment is a way for him to be in the minor leagues without actually being sent down to the minor leagues. But he's got to pitch well. I am not prepared to call up Kodai Senga. I'm not. I am not in favor of it. I've been a fan of Senga before, but I don't think that's the way to go. I think he's got to pitch well. His last performance was 5 innings, 3 runs at AAA. It's not good enough. And I don't want to hear that he's working on stuff. And if it doesn't get better, you're going to have a conversation with him, which is, we're activating you and we're optioning you to AAA. The other option is Thornton, who we saw a little bit earlier, the left-hander. He has also not pitched great since the Mets optioned him down to the minors. Obviously, Jack Weininger is a guy to keep an eye on. And I think Tobias Myers is probably the route I would take. I think Tobias Myers should be stretched out in the minors. We've said that for a while. Actually, I've said that he should have been stretched out at the major league level. And you can still do that. Like, he can appear once or twice at AAA. And then eventually, once he's eligible to be recalled, because that's kind of the other issue you're running into. When is he eligible to be recalled? He was sent down on May 30th. So you're looking at, yeah, that brave time. He would be eligible, my math tells me. So he could be the guy. And he comes up and you get three or four innings out of him. I think the other option is to reinsert David Peterson into the rotation, which I guess you could do. And I'm not in favor of it, though. Look, David Peterson was good in his last performance. When was it again? I'm going through my scorecard. Oh, yeah. It was the four scoreless innings on Sunday against Miami. So you got a lot of options, but I think we'd all agree none of these options are great. Kodai Senga off the IL, great, not great. Thornton getting another opportunity, not great. Jonah Tong will eventually get another opportunity. Tobias Myers, David Peterson back into the rotation. I think what I lean more towards is Myers and maybe a Myers-Peterson tag team upon his return. I think Manaea's earned a rotation spot. Now, whether that's a real rotation spot or it's being the bulk guy, it's essentially the same thing. It's just a matter of how you're lining up the start. But Charles Manaea is in the rotation, and I think he's earned it. He's pitched well enough. So that's the spot the rotation is in. If I had to power rank it, I think it's Myers coming up and Peterson being his caddy, if you will, as what I would want to do. And then eventually, Tong and Thornton and Weininger, if they're pitching well enough, could be the young options. Coming up against the Padres, here's the way things line up. I mentioned Christian Scott's going to start on Friday. Nolan McClain is going to start on Saturday and Sean Manaea in some form on Sunday. They're facing Michael King on Friday and Griffin Canning on Saturday. So the old friend spot with Griffin Canning. Two out of three. That's what we need to see. You win two out of three. It's a 3-3 road trip. You get back home right where you started at seven games under 500. And then you have a homestand against St. Louis and Atlanta. I think that is the reasonable goal, the hopeful goal, as they head into these three games against the San Diego Padres. Like I always say, we'll have a Rico after each series like we are doing here. And then we will throw in some pop-up instant reaction Ricos when needed, necessary, or we feel like it. So subscribe to the Rico Bronya. You'll never miss an episode. Subscribe to the WFAN YouTube page, and then you can consume an episode live and ask in the chat, why are you talking about the Mets when the Knicks are playing in the NBA Finals? And there's a great answer to that. Because it's a Met podcast, and I don't care how much they suck or how much we won't talk about them on WFAN. I've barely mentioned the Mets on FAN this week. The Rico exists for the diehards. If the Mets ever get good, sure, more people will show up and we'll have a party. But the Rico Bronya is for you sickos out there like me. So whether it's the Knicks in the NBA Finals or whatever, there'll be a Rico. Just be patient week one of the NFL season, because that Rico may be delayed heavily. But we'll get to it at some point. Either way, we appreciate you subscribing and downloading the Rico Bronya. Thank you very much. Let's go, Mets. And thanks to Hoff. Great job by Pete Hoffman doing double duties. We'll catch you next time on another edition of Rico Bronya.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Rico Bronya podcast. It's amazing, isn't it? Make sure you download it now to keep it on you at all times.
It's always amazing to see how quickly your child grows, and I'm not just talking about their height. From those early babbles to full-on storytelling, getting to watch how their ideas, creativity, and confidence develop over the years is honestly pretty incredible. Sometimes they surprise you with what they come up with, and Lego Bricks can be right there with them through all of those stages. It's not just a toy, it's a full creative building journey that keeps evolving as they do. Lego Sets Play starts as early as 1.5, with Lego Duplo, the bigger bricks designed for little hands that are just starting to explore and build. Then around age 4, kids transition to the smaller Lego bricks, and suddenly, you're watching real structures take shape, real ideas form, and their imagination really take off. They begin with simple stacking, but over time they grow into full-on creators, building worlds, stories, and things you never would have expected. That's the kind of magic of Lego bricks. You're not buying a phase, you're starting a journey. Learn more and start building today with Lego bricks.